The Streets Don't Love You Back radio show started in 2009 by Rob and Lucinda, and it is still currently going on really strong. If you would like to be a guest on the show, advertise any brand or product that you have, or get your music played, you can contact us at our website at www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.com. That's www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.com. And thanks again for your continued support. We do appreciate it.
Hey, this is Daniel from the Philippines, rocking with Rob and Lucinda at the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. Hey, this is Daniel from the Philippines, rocking with Rob and Lucinda at the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show.
The truth is this. We must push to change these horrible laws, prison reform, and long convicted drug sentence guidelines. It's a must that we fight to change the whole criminal system. First, we have to look at these politicians in our states that's not doing anything to change the criminal system and still abiding by bad laws. We must vote these corrupt politicians and others that's not for the people out of the office. So please, share this video around the world and stand up for what's right. Let's push for criminal justice reform. The truth is this, we must push to change these horrible laws, prison reform, and long convicted drug sentence guidelines. It's a must that we fight to change the whole criminal system. First, we have to look at these politicians in our states that's not doing anything to change the criminal system and still abiding by bad laws. We must vote these corrupt politicians and others that's not for the people out of the office. So please, share this video around the world and stand up for what's right. Let's push for criminal justice reform.
Backed by popular demand.
Yo, what up, though? Rob Boy would like to thank Hip Hop Weekly for the support and the promotion of the new album, Back to the Money Bag. That's worldwide, you dig? Yeah. Also, thank you for the support of the new single and the video, Back by Popular Demand. We in the building. Let's go.
Hey, hey, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the hottest show worldwide, The Streets Don't Love You Back. We got a great, great guest today, my nephew Ronell in the building. He'll be coming in shortly, and we're going to go to a song right quick. And we just want to let people know this prison reform thing is serious out here, and we have to be a loud voice, and we have to speak up. People getting wrongly convicted, people spending all this crazy time in prison, and then people hiding evidence. So we have to get on top of that, and we're going to keep that going. And once again, we got a great show coming up, and our nephew will be sliding in real soon. So we're going to go to a song and come back.
Star.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, we had our nephew coming in, Ronell, and he's going to formally introduce himself. Hey, what's up, nephew? How you doing down there?
Hey, man, you know I'm solid, man. Everything over here.
My man. Well, hey, go ahead and formally introduce yourself, and we're going to get right into this interview.
All right, man. So my name is Ronell Johnson, man. I also go by the nickname Nail Home because I am an exoneree. And they say Nail Home, you know, Nail Home, everybody use that as like, you know, a term of endearment, but it's like a little handle because I am in a little bit of an entertainment lane. You know, I do a little bit of rap. I do a little bit of this and that. So Nail Home is also a name you'll hear me going by. But I served 15 years in prison for armed robbery and conspiracy that involved four men. And I was actually not involved in that crime whatsoever. I wasn't, you know, related to these guys. These guys were never apprehended or anything, but I was framed and implicated in this crime by my father, who saw the news broadcast of the robbery, and one of the individuals who had a mask on, you know, he was just a light-skinned man with a short haircut, you know, a light-skinned male with a short haircut, and me being a light-skinned male with a short haircut, you know, he just, you know, believed it was me and called himself helping solve the case. And that's how I got implicated in this armed robbery. And I was sentenced to 17 to 25 years in the Michigan Department of Corrections. And it took me 15 years to free myself to file my own motion in the courts with new evidence. And my new evidence was that because my father actually had convinced my aunt, which is his, one of his sisters, to corroborate his belief that I was one of the people wearing the mask, one of the individuals on footage. And so with that, the judge, you know, found me guilty. But years later, about 7 years later, you know, my aunt actually came forward that, you know, that was not, you know, something that she did of her own volition, her own free will. She was, you know, coerced by my father to make that testimony and support him at trial in order to basically save my life. He had convinced her that I was this individual, but she really knew that that wasn't me. So finally came forward. And with that evidence, we also had a height expert come in and analyze the crime scene along with the still photographs of the suspect, and they determined that the suspect was approximately 5'9", with a margin of error of only 3/4 of an inch. So 0.75 was the margin of error between 5'9". And so I'm 6'1". And with that evidence, I finally – you know, over a course of many years and ups and downs within the prison system, man, many times when I kind of like gave up and I didn't have any representation, let me remind you guys that I never was able to rally the troops and have support. I just wasn't able to do that. I had to be strong and just do my bit, do my time and figure out, you know, I had to just go into my mind's eye and just find my way out. And I knew that, hey, this new evidence is out here. Let me figure out how to put it down in the proper format, and that's all that's necessary. Once I did that, I was also enough that in my county we had a new regime in the prosecutor's office, a new prosecutor and a new prosecuting team that came on that were about more so about reform, justice reform, and like cleaning up bad convictions. And so they created a conviction integrity and expungement unit in my county, which is Washtenaw County. I'm from Ypsilanti, Michigan. And when I filed that paperwork, the judge ordered it was merited, and it had enough merit that the judge ordered the prosecutors to respond to it because, hey, if you guys contend any of this stuff that Mr. Johnson's filed, any of this new evidence that was not presented at his original trial, he's saying he's innocent. He has his evidence now, and this evidence was not presented at the original trial. So they looked into it and investigated, and lo and behold, they discovered that the previous prosecutors were also prosecuting my father in a separate case. He had caught a felonious assault and had a habitual enhancement and was on going to prison for 6 years, mandatory, because of the habitual enhancement, and that crime happened before before the crime that I was sent to prison on. And that when he saw the crime happen, he gave me up in order to get favor in his case. He worked with the prosecutors, and he became a star witness in my case. And that the new prosecutors found out that was the case, but that they did not tell us. Sorry for all the confusion, but the point is the prosecutor is obligated to inform the court and the defense that, hey, Mr. Johnson's father is implicating him in this crime, yes, but we are also prosecuting him in a separate matter. So this can go to the maybe the motive of why he's doing this, because we had no idea why my father would do that. And we just really thought, I just thought he was just off his rocker or crazy or just wrong, you know, just so wrong that he did that, and he was just maybe in the interest of justice, he was so wrong. But no, he really had created a deal with the prosecutors to get out of his own trouble, and he felt that, you know, my life wasn't worth a damn. You know, he told me that, you know, I would be okay. I would still be young, and I would be okay. I just needed to learn my lesson, so to speak. So this was what the new prosecutors uncovered that the old prosecutors hid from the court, and those combining factors is what made my case so sensational and just different, where you had the prosecutors and the defense come together and ask for me to be released, and I got released like fairly swiftly after 15 years of those facts being ignored. Like, and I really got released on some of the same stuff that was already known from the beginning. Like, it was really, when they say new evidence, it was really just newly admitted. It's not like it was something that was hidden. It was there. Nobody bothered to do their job. Everybody was so hell bent on. Well, we know the prosecutor was working with my father on that end. So at that point, it was never a true interest of justice. It was kind of like appeasement. You know, hey, we're gonna let you slide. Give us your son. You know what I mean? And it's like that's what happened with me.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what happened with me.
That's amazing.
In a nutshell, I try to make that quick for y'all, man.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, nephew, I want you to tell the viewers right now, when you get in that type of situation and you in prison and you know you're not guilty of this crime, and a lot of them might want to just give up, what advice would you give them?
So, depending on, you know, it's a lot of factors in this, man. Me personally, I'm not the biggest, baddest, roughest, toughest. I'm not the most intimidating looking guy. I'm a tall, slim, light-skinned guy. I didn't have no size, I mean, no muscle then. I was like 165 pounds at the time. But I had a lot of pride. I knew, you know, everybody don't have enough nerve to stand up to what it's going to take to stand up to, because you're going to have guards coming at you sideways, guys coming at you sideways, and people in your life not there for you. That was always there for you when you was free, even if they wasn't there for you was free, they hear you free, you can work that out. But when you locked away, out of sight, out of mind, and ain't nobody there for you, that's a whole different type of battle. So, for me, I could just tell you, if you want to channel the type of time I was on, you know, I came in there, man, with a chip on my shoulder, and I was angry, man. I was upset at what happened, and I was like, almost, I was naive, because I said, ain't no way in the hell this is gonna happen to me. Like, I don't give a damn what the judge just said. I'm convicted and I'm guilty. I had this undying belief that at any given time the phone can ring and they'll find the real guys that did it, because I didn't do it. So at the same time I was doing my bit, I couldn't go in there like, hey, looking for sympathy and looking for a shoulder to cry on and ask for help and saying I'm innocent, because what happened is guys will prey on that and prey on you and, you know, turn you inside out. So I knew that my wisdom, lucky enough, I was groomed up enough and I had enough wisdom to know, hey, my appearance and the way I look, it's going to make people try to play me a certain way. In my situation, if I even told somebody the truth, hey, my father betrayed me, did me in, well, hell, why shouldn't I? Why shouldn't I betray you and do you in? You know what I mean? I'm not your daddy. So it's like I knew it was that twisted. I'm like, damn, I had to have this animosity on me, man. So I had a little animosity. I ain't take no shit, and I ain't play no games, and I stood for something. And I, at the same time of doing that and representing something and standing for something that wasn't going to really help me, because I don't know if your listeners know this, but I've always claimed and represented Crip, Roller 60 Crip, Neighborhood Crip, whatever you want to call it, the Crip set. And that was what was impressed upon me at a very young age, and I carried that into my adulthood. You know what I mean? I never did figure out how to separate myself from that. I only got deeper and deeper into it and more into it, like, on the growth side, not on the side of, like, just death and destruction and mayhem. No, I actually grew and elevated, and by still standing on that, like I said, it never did nothing for me. It really caused more harm, because I had a lot of conflict with fellow inmates, because my gang wasn't popular at this point in time. It was the opposition that was popular and taking off. So I had to navigate that, you know, being attacked and being outcast, but still having enough respect and gaining enough respect to be respected and walk in the room full of the enemy, and them still saying, no, he cool. And it's only because I was dealing in righteousness. I'm just being myself. And if anybody would have just paid attention for long enough, they'd see, oh, man, dog, cool. He not. So I never did use the gang shit in a negative fashion. It's just who I am. It's just who I represent. I represent the good side of the individuals that may claim something. You know what I mean? So my point in being is that I didn't go in there, man, and get – I wasn't, like, ducking down, laying low, staying off the radar. No, I represented something. I stood up. I played basketball. I didn't – you know, a lot of guys say shy away from contact, shy away from doing things, but that wasn't my method because that wasn't going to make me tough and that wasn't going to teach me nothing. I'm a guy who got to go through the fire, you know. So I did, man. I stood up for who I was, and at the end of the day, all them guys respected me in the end because I did go to the law library and study and learn. I did impart advice on other people. I imparted advice on guys who were called opposition. I told them, gave them advice in game and told them, hey, for those of the ones who I could tell my situation to, who I did see had some level of empathy in them and could understand where I was coming from, I would reveal that. But that's just not something that you go in there trying to lead with. You can't lead like that. You know what I mean? That's something that can only be told to somebody that you're venting to that you know got something in common with you and you hope they won't betray you or use that to exploit you. So it's a lot of exploiting that goes on in prison. It's a lot of manipulation that goes on in prison, and it goes on from not only your fellow inmate who in a desperation situation, but it goes on from the guards and staff who feel like they got to punish you further. And it also because they got their own shames and things they do in life, and, hey, when they come in there, they can, you know, get their rocks off. It ain't too many guards that come in there for real to just do their 8 and skate, do their 8 hours and leave and go home without getting all the text into the politics of the prison and wanting to get in the inmates' business and step on, you know, and rival them and step on them, put them in, you know, lock them up and frame them and all kind of shit. So I don't look like what I've been through. You know, I suffer very well. I got so much pride that, man, I never let people see how hurt I was or messed up I was. I just went up in my head and tried to figure a way out. Sometimes people might have thought I was being lazy because I laid in the room for a week and it may not appear that I was doing nothing. But what I was doing was tapping into the higher power, man. I was tapping into something. I was going up into my spirit and saying, man, find me this way. I'm like, I'm trying to get one with my way out. You know what I mean? And so that's what I can tell the listeners, man. That's what I can tell y'all. That's if you want to, you know, take a page out of my playbook. It may not work for you, but it may very well work for you at the same time. Because hey, as long as it reaches somebody, as long as this can help somebody and deter them from having to go through what I went through and any of my brothers went through, that's what we're here for, you know what I mean? And that's what that is.
My man. So, Nephew Ronell, we interviewed you for Trapped in the Hood documentary series, episode 12. Tell the viewers a little bit about your episode that's coming up.
So we put it together, man. We're trying to showcase, because this is, you know, this is, of course, this is over the radio, but we want to showcase with, you know, with the eyes, so you can see the eyes, you know, you can visualize and see things, you can see who I am, you can see all the specifics of what went on and how this happened, how this can't happen. We want to document paperwork. We want you guys to see this, and we want you to be able to apply these things across the board, because I'm from Michigan. Some things may not apply in certain states, but they do. It's always a relation. It's a correlation. So we find a correlation. My episode is just to put on display. It's to show my character, you're going to see how I bounce back from that happening to me. Like I said, I suffer well. You're not going to really see. I'm like, damn, he went through that? He still looked relatively young. I'm 36. I did 15 years on a 17 to 25 year sentence. And you're going to just learn much more than we can say with words, because, you know, they say a picture say 1,000 words. So when we show you these, when we give you these views and tie it in with the narrative, you know what I mean, and show you point for point how to evade this type of capture, a false accusation, a false accuser, a false case, a false jacket. When they put a jacket on you and say and frame you up, you know what I mean? You got to know it's a whole lot of things to your disposal that you got that we could have, because, like, see, I learned in the aftermath what I didn't know up front, which they should have never been able to even frame me like that, because we had things in our disposal, tools in our tool belt, in ways that we could have defeated this case in the front end. It would have never even made it to a trial. But because we was ignorant of the law and because we didn't have the finances and the wherewithal and the people, We got duped. We got ganked. We got railroaded. You know what I mean? We don't want people getting railroaded. We want people to understand. So in my episode, I'm giving you the game. I'm giving you the game. The raw game is going to be, like I say, man, I'm connected, you know, with this community, with this wrongful conviction community, this justice reform community, and I stay connected with the gang community as well. When I say the gang community, I hope y'all understand this, man. I don't glamorize death and destruction. I don't glamorize ignorance and stupidity. We're trying to save people. Somebody gonna claim. Everybody gonna claim something. Just so happened I was claiming something. So anybody claim what I claim, and anybody claim anything, we all got the same thing coming. We come from a tribe. We tribal. So I'm trying to reach all tribes and mine specifically as well. You know, we can't reach everybody, but you know what I mean? For those who I still affiliate with, all I do is give them the game and try to save their life, you know what I mean? And we ain't going to be this way forever, you know what I mean? We transition, you know what I mean? So as I continue on my transition, I can help somebody transition on theirs as well. And that's what my episode, you know what I mean, going to be a lot of. It's going to be across the board. Y'all can hear it in this preview, in this warm-up.
My man, that's what's happening, nephew. And you called me earlier today, nephew, about a gentleman that's in prison on the wrongly convicted as well. Can you speak on that and give that young man a shout-out as well?
Yeah, man, that's Rob, man. That's my guy, Rob, man. His name is Robin Hammock, R-O-B-I-N. Hammock is H-A-M-M-O-C-K. And he actually is in the process of getting back a different route than I did. I got back through a Michigan Innocence Clinic in the Washtenaw County Conviction Integrity and Expungement Unit. He's getting back through the merits of his court filings, just through the court. He got his own attorneys. He doesn't have, like I said, Innocence Project or Conviction Integrity Unit. And that is a much more uncertain and precarious route, because the prosecutor's position is not one where, in my case, they conceded and was like, okay, yeah, wrong was done. They're trying to create scenarios that make him look guilty in the face of new evidence that says he's innocent. In his case, a guy was killed in a house that he was in, but the thing is, one of the guys that got killed was part of a group of guys, and they were there to rob the house. And when they was there to rob the house, the person that was standing in the house, the owner had somebody standing in the house, and that person shot one of the robbers. Well, those robbers turned themselves into victims when the police came. They, instead of saying that they was there to rob and saying that that guy shot them, they said that Rob shot them because Rob was there too. They saying that Rob shot him as if he was trying to rob him. They just turned themselves into victims. And then because it's like in the law, if you tell, to give you the benefit of the doubt. Like if you tell, it don't matter if you're lying. Like the police just want you. They want the lead. They want something to go on, and they want to, as fast as possible. They don't want to get all into the They don't want to get off into that. They want to know, they want to just drop that dime. So the first person to drop that dime gets to believe they get the favor. They get the, you know what I mean? So these guys who was there to rob this place, and then one of them gets shot and killed, the other of them say, oh, we was there, man, and dog shot us to try to rob us, because they don't want to be implicated in the robbery. And how they, so that's how my man even got tied up. Well, later, lo and behold, his new evidence is that the person who, the owner of the house knows, he doesn't want to give up. I think they don't want to give up the guy who shot the dude dead. But he knows, and he's the new evidence, this new witness. The owner knows that those guys who came there to rob it, and that the guy who he had standing there shot him. He knows that. So he's going to testify to the fact, and he already did, I believe. That's why they're in court. That's why he's almost back home and close, and it's being debated that the owner of the house said, hey, man, that man I had standing in my house told me he shot somebody because they were trying to rob it. So that goes, that was never discussed or disclosed at Robin's trial, and therefore that by itself flipped everything on his head and gives him the right to have a new trial. But without him having a certain level of support or a certain level of, or just a certain route, you take certain routes, they're way more problematic. And the course, the general course of appeals is very, very, very built on you going to the last step before you can ever get relief. And sometimes you get locked out and have to get the help of like an innocence clinic or a CIU, because they always they try to protect the system. The system is built to protect itself, and not give people relief, because if everybody got relief, there would be no finality in the law. So let me just bring it back to a nutshell that that's his case. He basically brought new evidence that, hey, these guys ain't victims. These guys is attackers. You know, they just try to spin it because they didn't want to take, you know, the rap for, you know, them being there on a robbery. So that's the situation.
Right.
That's pretty much all I know. He just got recently being able to, you know, call me like he does, and he's just trying to rally, man. He's trying to rally and get them people not to play him, because they very well could. A judge could just not let that fly in his courtroom, and the judges get a lot of leeway for what got them to the position of being a judge. You know what I mean? They don't have to explain themselves that much. You know what I mean? They could just say, "Oh,
no,
it was just
they
theory."
They can just say yes
and
or no.
And it's like, dog, yeah, ain't it crazy? Like, they got extraordinary power. So if a judge wants to prolong him, not get him, and that prosecutor is just hell bent on not facing the reality, it's called kangaroo court. Because how is it that this same jacket, if you was to put that on your family member, or your loved one, you know, goddamn well, you can't put that on him. That, like OJ, or like Johnny Cochran said, the late great Johnny Cochran, if it don't fit, you must acquit. This doesn't fit the narrative. This is not this. So why are we sitting here coming up and creating with ways that it can?
Right.
putting lists
and
to other people, like, why are you
line.
Doing that? Where are you coming from? Like, who are you trying? So can we ask you the question? Can we reverse this and put it? Nobody has ever, I don't think anybody has yet to do that in a serious situation, the case of innocence, where they ask these prosecutors, let's turn this around and you want to put the same thing on you. And you saying what I'm saying, and I'm saying what you're saying.
And
can
that's the way they do that thing.
Be lifted, yeah, no doubt, bro. It's ridiculous, bro. It's ridiculous, man. They're trying to play mind games on another level, man. It's mind games, bro. It's wrong.
Yeah.
And it's going to stop because we got a batch of guys out here in Michigan for sure. And I just went to the Innocence Network conference where I met you at, Rob. I met Rob and Lucinda down in Phoenix, Arizona. And we went down there for the Innocence Network conference, the annual. And I met guys from every state down there. Most of the states, I say. Not every state, but most of the states. And guys is coming home in droves. And we got one of the biggest groups out of Michigan, and there's other states that got pretty big groups. And the point is that reform is coming. them people that's in position, they get old, they dying off, and there's new mindsets coming in. It's a new idea coming up, being birthed, and we the spearhead of that. We are the spearhead of that. And these old archaic thinking and old fashioned and trying to stick to the old way, gatekeepers, I call them gatekeepers. These gatekeepers are trying to keep the system messed up and stuck in a state of static. Like, it's stuck when the world is constantly evolving and growing and changing. They want to have a system that is like has no color in it. It wants to just be black and white. It wants to just be, you know, they don't take into account your environment and your system and what went into making you think holding a gun is cool versus or even normal versus somebody who would be horrified of a gun. Well, that's the environment they're in. In their environment, they're horrified of a gun. And in this environment, a gun is not so horrifying because it's very necessary. So that when this person in the environment where a gun is horrifying, rob somebody, kill them, or shoot them, you give them some type of understanding and favoritism because of where they come from versus me being in the war zone and I shoot and kill somebody, you throwing my life away. That's what they do. That's what these judges do. They don't give any type of understanding to the ghetto areas or to the rough areas when people are doing crime or doing stuff. But when the people in the good areas doing stuff, it's like the law – even though it says in black and white, they don't dish it out the same. You know what I mean? They don't dish it out the same. Each person, each individual
right.
person is playing, you know, interpreter over these laws. And that's just, that's,
and,
once you
and
realize
not really
right
doing what they should
law,
be doing.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nope.
So that's what it is, nephew. You know what I mean? I'm glad and I'm proud to hear, you know, we got some young minds that's getting in these offices because, you know, you got people like you just stated, certain states that don't have no term limits, and you got people in these certain seats that's
been in
20, 30,
the
40 years.
Oh, yeah. He'll be there till he dies. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like that's a thing that we need to work on, and I speak on that a lot, that These term limits should be across the board, whether it's in Washington or whatever state. It should be a term limit on how long you can sit in that seat as a prosecutor, as a senator, as a whatever, because if you ain't doing nothing just sitting there and you living off the old game, you ain't doing nothing to change life or change the situation. Yeah. You just getting paid to sit in that seat. So we have to continue pushing that narrative. Any shout outs you'd like
you
to give, nephew, before we go?
Thinking. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
hey,
any
I'm
shout
sorry,
outs you'd like to give?
Man.
What's your turn, nephew? Any
shout
out
to the organization of exonerees, man, Ken Nixon. Yeah, shout out to the organization of exonerees. Ken Nixon just filed his lawsuit against the Detroit Police Department and specific officers, man. We just had a press conference. We've been on Channel 4 News, Channel 2 News, and Channel 7 News in Detroit, man. He is a serious, he means serious business out here. He has been home just a little over 2 years, man, and he's already aligned himself with some very powerful people in the state, and there's going to be a lot of change coming, man. Shout out everybody, man, who stick by me, man, and who understand it, man. I'm just trying to find my place out here in the world. It's kind of hard not to get distracted with all these things on the table when I spend a lot of my life, you know what I'm saying, behind bars, behind doors, without things, you know what I mean, without things or attention and without outside people. I never had to manage these relationships that I have to manage now. So I just shout out to everybody who understands that. And, yeah, man, be on the lookout, man, for
answers. That's what it is,
man. Talking to you. You know, we're going to put it together and deliver it to y'all in style, man.
And that's what's up, nephew. Hey, we appreciate you coming on the show today. And keep up the good work. And let's keep pushing, man, for that justice reform, honorees, and people that's getting in these prisons and don't need to be there. And much love to you next time.
And much love to you and Lucinda, man. Send my love.
All right, peace.
Yeah, peace.